Veterans Transportation and Economic Development Committee on Joint Ways and Means. This afternoon, we're continuing on to the public hearing on Senate Bill 5510, Economic Community Development. And with us today, on behalf of the department, is Mike Burton, Assistant Director of the Economic Development, Community Development Department, as well as Kelly Friels from the Budget, Department of Administrative Service Budget and Management Analyst. Please go ahead, Mike.
Chair Butler, members of the committee, I'm going to introduce myself since you already did. I'm going to pick up where I left off yesterday, which was on page 10 of your packet. Page 10 refers to the Oregon Bond Bank. Oregon, and I was talking, if you recall, I was talking about the model program that the state, that the department has developed with our partners. The bond bank consists of a number of elements. It's separate and distinct from lottery bonds. That's an important distinction. It consists of lottery bonds issued by the state of Oregon. The state of Oregon does not guarantee these bonds. The bonds are supported by loan payments made by the communities, usually from system user fees.
So I'm aware of this, Mike, this is package 201, is that correct?
Are you, you're simply giving an overview?
Still giving the overview of the elements in the community development.
And where is page?
And he, I believe, is referring to the handout from yesterday.
Right, and yesterday, we're continuing.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And I don't know if it's in that file or not.
I don't know if it's in that file.
What page number?
It's page 10 of that handout.
Page 10 of a different file than what I got here. I'm sorry. Because package 201 deals with bond bank in part. That's 190. I thought, boy, are we going to have some fun? Everybody wants to borrow that $196 million. Senator Yee has a train station for it. Representative Johnson needs it up in.
I have shown the project.
In spray.
And I would defer and give it all to spray.
We certainly have heard about spray, haven't we?
Chair Butler, members of the committee, we do have two-page version or two slides to page.
That would be lovely.
And we have more coming up.
Thank you, Mr. Burton.
Thank you.
I think he said he has more coming.
Yeah, okay. We have more coming.
All right.
Chair Butler, members of the committee. I'm speaking from page 10. I'm picking up where I left off yesterday. If you have the full packet, that's page 10. If you have the two slides per page version, that's, I think, page 5. And I was talking about Oregon, the Oregon Bond Bank. The department participates as a partner with the bond market on the bond bank. The department pays for cost of issuance and insurance, both of which save money for every jurisdiction that participates in the program. The department also provides a subordinated collateral loan, usually about one-sixth of the amount of the project. That way, the bond market, the buyers out there in the real world, can treat the department's participation as a collateral piece, as equity would be on a house. The result of all these things is a lower interest rate. The most recent issues by the department have received AAA ratings. Some communities in the state may be able to get that. Most of them can't even get close. Many of the communities that participate in the bond bank can't even, couldn't even sell bonds on the market without this pooled effort. The next slide shows some of the benefits. The bottom line is it saves money for all citizens. Provides access to the market for some people, some communities who couldn't even get there. The slide on page 12 talks about the work the department does in building the bond bank. So far, bond issues are more rigorous and more complex than anything else the department does. There's more work involved in putting one of these together. And that's true with much of what we do. Ideally, all of these streamlinings that we've undertaken in the last couple of years would have made life easier for us. I do believe they make life easier for our customers, but they, for the most part, entail more work. And here's an example. The bond bank requires us to work with the companies, or the communities, and specifically our regional coordinators do this work. They go out with the community, they gather up information, they bring the information back to Salem. We will do a piece of this work with every project that we finance, in that we would like to take the very best of the loans that we make over a period of time and put those into the bond pool. We put our best credits in the bond pool, we get a better interest rate, which, as I said, benefits more Oregon communities. Representative Johnson.
A clarifying question. Why are you issuing your own bonds? Why don't you go to the state central banker and do it through the Treasury?
Representative Johnson, technically that's what happens. Well, the bonds are issued through the Treasury.
They're issued through the Treasury?
Yes. Yeah, all of the bonds that this department works with, it's not like the housing authorities that have their own bond counts and so forth. They use all of the Treasury's.
I had the impression that you were using a lot of staff to do your own bond work and retaining bond counsel, but you are using the Treasury.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I'm almost certain of that. I can check and get back to you. But
I'll add
really,
it to my question list.
Okay, or we'll just deal with it. Nevertheless, we do the analysis for the bonds. We put together the documenting materials. Since we're working with the customers, the communities out there, we do a big chunk of the work. Our regional coordinators gather information. They bring it back. Our financial people analyze most of the projects we see during a given window, select the best credits. We put those forward to the bond. We contract through a bond council who does another piece of work on top of that. We take our best credits and go to the bond council, and the bond council does another level of work, which I don't even understand.
So you are using your own bond council?
Yes. Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, we do use our own bond council.
The council is used for the treasurer's office.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I'll find out. I'll find out the details on how it works.
Doris, do you issue your own bonds, or does the Treasury issue them for you?
The Treasury issues them for us.
Okay, and you use the Treasurer's Council?
That's correct.
Okay.
And contract with us.
Wait a minute.
You guys just said two different things.
Do you have your own bond council or use the Treasury's bond council?
We use our own bond council.
Okay.
Chair Butler, Representative Johnson, I will verify that.
Thank you. Clarifying question, unclarified.
Chair Butler, members of the committee, I do hear behind me the commission now, and I think it's our interest that they waiting for one more. Okay, then I'll keep going. So, the department or the
second one, Chair, however.
Okay. Chair Butler, I would take exception to one part of that. But respectfully so. So then the department or the Treasury sells the bonds, and I'll get back to you with the answer on that. Once the bonds are sold, cash is available to the department and deposited on behalf of the communities. Our coordinators then work with the communities to make sure that the project progresses as it should, and we disperse cash as progress is made. The next slide, number 13, talks again about the integrated department delivery system. This was already covered by Bill in his introduction. The reason it's included again is to show you by the asterisk which of our teams are involved in this community development finance work. Page 14 gets to the department programs. These are covered in detail starting on page 3 behind the tab in your binder that is labeled Community Development Finance. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through them. I am going to point out that the first three are in the allocation plan. That was the matrix that we talked about at the end of this section in the binder. yesterday. Safe Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund is the Health Division program. The department does provide match, and then the money is treated in our budget as other funds from the Health Division. You don't see the Health Division part, but it's part of the other funds. The Oregon Bond Bank is not really a program, but it's a vehicle to generate money. Community Development Block Grant Program is a federal program. We receive money on behalf of communities and then make grants only from that program to our to the communities who apply. Yesterday we heard from Oregon Downtown Development. I was thinking rural development issues that show up today, and I was going to invite them to the table, but I don't see Kathy in the audience. So I'll move on to the next page. And this slide 15 is a report of the activity in the Community Development Fund. We undertook technical assistance projects, 39 in 97. I'll let you read that. I don't have to read it to you. One important note is that the historical activity is for a full biennium. The current period is for the first 18 months of the biennium. We cut this off on December 31st. Page 16 talks about the activity of essentially Oregon Downtown Development Association and Rural Development Initiative. There are a couple of other small projects in there. Slide 17 talks about investment in community facilities. I want to point out just a couple things on this slide. Prior to 99-00, this is an annual layout, the department only funded community facilities through community development block grant. Community development block grant can only be distributed as grants by federal loan. Starting in 99-00, we started to use community facilities loan authority within the Special Public Works Program. So you see an increase in the number of projects funded, and all of that increase is through loans. Just quickly on slide 18, I think this is an important place to point out one of the places where workload is having an impact on the agency. This is actually a representation of one of the 27 performance measures, but it is and it's included for that reason. The performance measure is fairly narrowly defined. It talks about projects which have been completed, and by the definition of the performance measure is those that we have administratively closed out. Because of the staffing issue, because that is so burdening getting the money out the door, we've got these projects completed but not closed out. Therefore, in terms of the performance measures, they're not showing up in numbers that like should be represented. In the future, especially if we are successful with our program option packages, we will see a change in that and see many more projects coming out the books. To show you the contrast in that, I've listed on the next page, page 19, those projects which we've actually funded. Not necessarily closed out, but underway. The first block are, those we funded. The second block are those projects on the needs and issues list. Not funded, but water and sewer projects that are, if you will, in the pipeline. And now I understand that Kathy Jaworski is here. So I don't know if she's ready to come to the table, but we'll invite her up here. Chair Butler, members of the committee. As we spoke yesterday, part of the department's program delivery is through contractors. We don't have enough people to cover all the bases. We talked yesterday a little bit about leadership and downtown development. Vicki Dugal is here to talk about downtown development. Kathy Jaworski is the director of Rural Development Initiatives, which is a contractor, a consistent partner of the department, and at one time was a part of the department. I'm going to invite Kathy to speak for a few minutes on what they do.
Okay. Thank you. Rural Development Initiatives is celebrating its 10th anniversary next year, And our purpose is really to help small communities deal with economic change, both in terms of generating jobs and in creating projects that contribute to quality of life. The role that we play is in primarily in very small communities with a population of 5,000 or less. And so we work with communities that for whom volunteers are a major part of the leadership base, and volunteers need to carry out whatever they plan to do. So our work is in an umbrella called capacity building, and it basically is providing volunteer leadership with the skills and knowledge that they need to be able to make good decisions strategically about what they should do in their community to improve the economy or improve quality of life, and then to have the skills to implement those decisions successfully. We have worked with, in the past biennium, over 100 communities, and to give you a sense of we track our communities in calendar years. So in 1996, we worked with 31 communities, 97, 30, 98, 29, 99, 42, and this past year, 2,067 communities. And our budget this past biennium from the department was actually less than it had ever been, including both the competitive funds and the basic contract that we have. There are five basic things that we do with communities. One is that if a community really wants to do something but isn't really sure where to start, we help them assess their possibilities through a tool that we actually worked with the department to develop. It's a capacity assessment tool, and it's basically done with a committee of folks from the local community to look at what the strengths and weaknesses are. It's in one meeting, and then they come out of that with a sense of some possibilities for future action. And this is something that has been tested in a couple of different versions this year, and we'll have it available for all communities around the state as of June. It's one of the products of our contract with the department. We also do strategic plans and strategic planning updates with communities. We actually, in the past biennium, had considered not doing much of this because there was a sense that perhaps communities were planned out. And when we started to pull back from this activity, we continued to see more and more demand for this than we had seen. So it appears to continue to be a need, both in communities that are experiencing economic decline and a new wave of economic decline, and in communities that are dealing with growth and trying to decide how to address those issues. The third area that we have programs in, and this is probably the biggest area, is our leadership development. This is an area where in Representative Johnson's area, a year and a half ago, we did a regional leadership training for members of the regional partnership in Northwest Oregon. And we also, last fall, did a statewide program for communities who are working on telecommunications, where they could bring a team of leaders from their community to both improve their skills in areas such as negotiation and persuasive communication and project analysis, and also learn more about telecommunications, the resources available, the technical terms, in a place that no question was stupid. And it worked out very well. And we had real small places from Christmas Valley to Vernonia to Cascade Locks to Wallowa County, places like that sent teams. And we also work in communities through training and technical assistance on whatever they're working on. We'll try to help them accomplish it. Typically that happens, a community will call us and we'll try to find the funding to match up with their needs and then work with them. We have five field staff who work out of home offices around the state. So our staff are located in Pendleton, Bend, Oregon City, Corvallis, and Roseburg, so they can work out from those areas to serve the whole state. And finally, we do special projects. One of the newest projects we're about to undertake is for the Office of Tourism within the department to analyze the tourism plans that have been done to date and to try to come up with a model in some pilot communities to work on a more sustainable tourism and integrate tourism with the rest of the economic development planning that's going on in their community. We try not to ever say no to a community. We certainly don't say no because it's too small or because it's too remote or because it's not ready yet. We really, our work is in the very early stages where a community is just beginning to pull its plans together, pull its ideas together, and just help it to reach the next step. There are lots of successes. They're not often within the time frame of one biennium. So we look at our work over a period of time. The first success will usually be that people feel like they know more than they used to know and have the skills to move forward. Then they carry out a project, then the project has the desired impact. And so this can take a number of years to show its results. But some examples, Rainier was a, we worked with Rainier right when the Trojan nuclear plant closed, and they were able to, with some of the same leaders who worked with us at the very beginning, to attract a major large employer back into the community. Milton Freewater, the leaders that we worked with there were able to bring Sykes and Enterprises in. In Irrigan recently, we worked with community leaders to help them get the message across to voters about the issues surrounding a water bond for their water treatment plant. They were under a DEQ moratorium, and they successfully passed the bond. Estacada opened an industrial park. Curry County was able to secure a telecommunications connection that no one thought could be done, that basically links it up to across the state line to get it the service that it needs. Cascade Locks got all its downtown development organizations working in the same direction. They had three or four groups working in three or four parts of the little downtown that they have. Sisters created a community development corporation to work on affordable housing. North Lake County created and sustained the health clinic. The Northwest Regional Leadership Alliance, that's the leadership training I mentioned earlier. That regional partnership is functioning very well. And as a result of working in that area, we're also working with the folks in Astoria and Columbia County and other parts of the state that are working on Lewis and Clark with money that we got from the Forest Service. And we're working with communities on the Highway 47 corridor to do business retention and expansion. All of that grew out of the work that leaders and the ideas that leaders came up with when we were doing our leadership training. As I mentioned, we have a staff of nine. Five are based in the field around the state. Roughly 50% of our budget comes from the Department of Economic and Community Development, part of it through a basic services contract and part of it through projects that emerge over the biennium, and we try to fill some gaps in the department's capacity. We also leverage funds in from other places such as foundations, banks, the Forest Service, HUD, fees from participants and fees from local communities. Because we target communities under 5,000 and communities that are poor and communities that are remote, we don't expect those communities to come up with a whole lot of the cost because they're low capacity, and that's why we work with them. So we try to help them over time be able to do more for themselves. Philomath is probably a very good example of a community that we did a lot of intensive work with years ago, and we haven't used any department money in this past biennium to work with Philomath, but we have worked with Philomath on a fee basis, and they continue to make progress in their community. We also are getting increasing requests to work out of state, so the work that you supported in Oregon is being seen in other states. People are asking us to bring those models there. They are paying us, and we're seeing it as an opportunity also to bring new models back from other states back to Oregon. This is really where we want to work. This is where we want to develop our models. We don't really like traveling that far afield, but it is an opportunity to cross-fertilize, and I think it speaks well of the state when other places, Alaska, Washington, Montana, Idaho, all look to Oregon for some models of how you build capacity in small communities and how you sustain it over time. And that is the extent of my formal remarks. I have brought some newsletters that have some descriptions of sample projects for your information. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? We have a quorum here at present, and I would like to have had Representative Ringo here. But let me just say this: in visiting with at least a couple of our present members of this subcommittee, I recognized last night that we are missing, particularly some of the freshmen, are missing some of the complex portions of this program. And today, in noting that we'll have the commission with us, members of the commission, three members of the commission with us, and tomorrow the governor, the governor and Mr. Thorne from the port, I would like to have Representative Johnson just quickly revisit, and I'm going to throw this idea out. That what I would like to do is that if we have a question as the presentation is being made, number one, that we can go ahead and ask the questions, and we'll do one follow up, and at that point I'll limit the questioning if the first as long as the first question has been answered. However, I'd like to give preference to the three freshman members of the House so that the questions that you may have are absolutely answered, and that we are not off in a different direction. We need to bring you along so that there's absolutely no question that, you understand the programs. And so I will violate the rule on the in favor of the freshmen, but if we could, I think that I would, and I don't mean to override our committee of one in this particular regard.
In complete accord, Mr. Chair.
Okay, but what I would like to do is I would like to, and particularly because the at this point, excuse me, the tenor of the initial presentation is past us with those folks that we'll see again and again. But those that won't be able to return now, we need to be able to ask questions so that we know where we're at. So if that's satisfactory, I'll exercise the terrible authority vesting the chair. Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much is your contract?
Our basic services contract is $413,400, and then we received roughly another $300,000 in specific projects over the biennium in response to community needs that came to us, and we went to the department and said, you have funds out of the competitive pot.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, yes.
Is this competitive or a negotiated contract? Both parts of it.
I think the basic services contract, I believe, is more negotiated. The competitive is nothing that's guaranteed. We'll hear from a community or one of the regional members of OECD will hear that there's a need, and they'll look at and see if they believe that we are someone who can provide the services, then we'll talk about whether we can do that. That's pretty much how it's worked. It certainly has not been cakewalk to assemble those resources.
And the 413 base contract, that's a biennial contract?
It's a biennial contract. And primarily that is for the leadership training and for some very specific identified tasks. Nothing new that emerges is funded out of the basic services contract.
Chair Butler, if I could add to that, I would support Ms. Jaworski's perspective. The base contract is negotiated. It is in the budget. I'm referring to the investment plan, the matrix on the last page. Again, under community assistance, the first line, planning implementation and capacity building base, formerly was a legislatively stipulated line item. And that part is the negotiated part of the contract. The balance of the resource from the department to rural development initiatives and two lines down in competitive community assistance, which is sort of competitive and sort of not. We're basically making grants to communities there, and the communities select a provider. So the provider's got to be, this is a response to the commission's direction that it not be an entitlement. And so we consider requests from communities for assistance, and they procure or solicit assistance that is not selected by us.
Thank you very much, Ms. Burton. Further questions of Ms. Jaworski, Western Chair? Thank you very much, Ms. Jaworski. Let's see. We still are short one member of the commission.
No,
we
have a question, too. Thank you.
Okay, all right, I'm sorry. If all three members would like to come forward from the commission, that'd be great. We've already defamed you one time, Brett.
I apologize.
No, it's fine. We said the best two-looking members arrived first.
That's true. No question about that.
Welcome, Judge White, Ms. Mayor. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Please proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair Butler. I'm Brett Wilcox. I'm chairman of the Economic and Community Development Commission and also vice chairman of the Oregon Progress Board. With me, are Judge White and Catherine Nader, two of our other commissioner members. In my real life, I'm president of Northwest Aluminum Company in the Dalles. The three of us very much appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to discuss the importance of economic and community development in the commission's work. I've served on the commission for the past 4 years, And personally, I've seen some very great strides made by the department and its partners in streamlining and enhancing the delivery of economic and community development services in the state. As you're no doubt aware, the 1997 and 1999 legislatures and the interim committees have made very substantial modifications in approach and priorities and systems, as well as the performance measurements that the Economic and Community Development Department works with. We as a commission welcome all those changes and in fact help propose them through our new directions in our 1997 biennial report. I personally served as chair of the 1998 interim work group, which involved members of the legislature, cities, counties, private business, and other parties to bottom-up evaluate the department priorities and services and to recommend changes to make it more effective and efficient. The work group recommendations that were put into statute by the 1999 legislature asked us to focus on four major areas: rural and distressed communities, Oregon companies, flexible partnerships, and sustainability. Since then, the department has completely reorganized its structure to better meet the needs of our Oregon communities. Our processes have been simplified and streamlined, and we're working with partnerships more than ever. The 1999 legislature also directed the commission through a budget note to evaluate our performance measurements and reporting processes. Realizing how important this was in my own experience on the Progress Board, I agreed to serve as chair of the Interim Task Force on Performance, which comprised a broad spectrum of participants, including legislators, to help us determine how best to report the Department of Performance. The effort was supported by technical assistance from the Progress Board. It certainly wasn't an easy task, but the task force and commission we're very pleased with what we were able to produce. We believe the Economic and Community Development Department has the best set of performance measurements in state government. There are a variety of programs and services providing financial and technical assistance to communities and businesses throughout Oregon. We're no longer just about job creation. More and more of the staff effort and department resources are directed to assisting rural and distressed communities, where water systems and sewer systems are crumbling and in need of replacement, where a few jobs can make a huge difference in the local economy and the community's viability. Another major focus now assisting small and emerging businesses and those owned by women and minorities has also altered how we evaluate performance. Recruiting big companies in urban Oregon may result in greater job creation, but it won't have the impact in the areas in which the legislature has directed our work. We basically see our responsibility as bringing together the two Oregons and helping economic and focusing on the economic and community development in those areas that don't have the resources to do it themselves. We understand that the legislature is discussing whether the commission and department's focus should be rebalanced to be sure that Oregon's economy and our efforts take into consideration the new economy. We very much would welcome that. We see our job as carrying out whatever responsibilities you assign to us, that's a discussion that if you would like to change our priorities anyway, we feel we can handle those responsibilities. Our mission is just to do as you tell us to do, and we believe we've been focusing on economic and community development because that's the direction we got from the legislature, and would be certainly happy if you to consider whatever direction you believe is appropriate for us. We realize the performance measurements we established are not perfect, and we are continuing to improve them. The department's information technology and data collection processes need improvement to enable us to get the data we need to have the best possible performance measurements. I can assure you that the department staff has been working very diligently to improve the technology and the processes that will allow more accurate and timely reporting and performance. In all, we are pleased with the direction of the department and with economic and community development efforts in the state. There certainly is room for improvement, but in the 4 years I've been on the commission, I see a very substantial improvement, much more responsive, engaged staff, and greater involvement by all our local and community partners throughout the state. I think when you see the way that all members of the coalition, cities, counties, ports have joined around the effort, we must be doing something right. I urge you to support the changes of the 1997 and 99 legislatures to evolve economic and community development in Oregon. Thank you for your time and effort and all you're doing to help us carry out our job. I think Catherine and Dale have some other things to add.
Chair Butler and Commissioner members, my name is Catherine Mader. I'm Vice President of Mader Engineering out of Corvallis, Oregon. In my real life, I'm an engineer in the forest products industry. And I was asked to come on board the commission at the very time that the legislature redrafted the direction of the commission. Part of the reason, in fact, a major part of the reason why I said yes to being on the commission was because of that refocus. I spend probably 99% of my time in regions, not only throughout Oregon, but the United States, that are rural, that are distressed, that need that kind of valuable assistance in economic development. When I came on board the commission, I have to tell you, I was a pretty tough critic of how the commission was going and the direction. And the staff will probably tell you on the side that I have not been easy with them during the years that we've been on the commission, redrafting performance levels, measurement levels, making sure that the data points make sense to me as an engineer. I have to tell you that I've been extremely pleased with the performance of staff and extremely pleased with the performance of the department. It's not that we don't have a distance to go, but I think we've accomplished some amazing good in the state of Oregon. And to not recognize, even in looking at the peripheral data, the impacts and the benefits that we have been able to reapportion to rural and distressed areas in the state simply is not looking at the data at all. So, I have to state that when I came on board, I was a pretty tough critic of where this commission was going. But I have been with them. I acknowledge the tremendous work that the staff and the commission has done, and they have accomplished good levels of performance, and I would encourage you to provide that support that Commissioner Wilcox has requested.
Thank you very much. Judge White, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Butler. I guess we're talking about what real life is. I joined real life 2.5 years ago when I retired. I was 24 years county judge in Harney County, and I've been on the commission since 1993, and I've seen the state in good times and bad times, and personally I prefer the good times, and unfortunately I think we may be heading into the bad times again. And one of the things I've noticed in the years that I've been involved with the legislature, we tend to stint on funds during the good times, and then we throw money at it in the bad times, and I think we have our priorities backwards. The time to build the infrastructure to do the economic development is when the times are good. It's not trying to catch up after the times become bad. I guess I'm probably the token Eastern Oregon, the token rural, the token Democrat on the commission, so I'm pretty token. And so I want to speak at those issues that I think are really important for rural Oregon. When I talk about rural Oregon, I think of Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, the coast, anything outside the Willamette Valley Corridor, which seems to be doing pretty good whether we operate or not. But if we're going to get away from the two Oregons that Brett talked about a while ago, we need somehow to bring the rest of the Oregon up. And so what I want to focus on, because I believe that the real problems facing rural Oregon are infrastructure, physical infrastructure and personnel infrastructure. And those are the two things that the Rural Investment Fund the Regional Investment Fund and the Port Revolving Fund do is provide those type of services to rural Oregon. And I know there has been a lot of conversation about performance, especially performance as to the number of jobs created related to the money that has been expended. But I want to emphasize to you that in rural Oregon, we will never be able to create those jobs if we don't get the infrastructure in place. And you're not going to get a fast return with jobs until you get that infrastructure in place. If we choose not to fund the infrastructure, we choose not to have economic development in those areas who don't have adequate sewers, adequate water, adequate streets, roads, industrial parks, all of those things that you have to have in place before you can have economic development. And I know many of you realize that, but I just want to emphasize, because my experience has shown that over the years, the regional investment fund, the rural investment fund are always up for grabs by someone. But I want to emphasize as much as I can how important those are to rural areas if we're ever going to reach parity or even come close to it with the rest of Oregon. The other thing I want to mention is, I think has been a tremendous help to rural Oregon has been the regional development officers, Bill Scott. We just had him in Regis. Now we have him pretty much to all the counties or a couple, three counties. You know, most of us in the rural counties, we don't have the staff to do economic development. So we depend on these regional development officers to follow up on leads, to help us make presentations and to find the resources that the department has to offer. And the other, now we have regional coordinators who bring in another level of expertise when there's problems starting to develop or when there's opportunities that it takes more coordination. And I think those are very, very important to rural Oregon. And so I think if I could make any plea to you would be that you would continue to fund the Regional Investment Fund, the Rural Investment Fund, and the Port Revolving Fund. I think those are the three key things for rural Oregon. Without them, I don't believe we have the tools to compete with the remainder of the state. And, you know, we didn't do that well during times of prosperity of competing with the rest of the state. You know, Harney County's unemployment just hit 18%, and most of eastern Oregon is going up now. As you all well know, the natural resource business is in the doldrums. We hardly cut any trees off our forest. Now, on top of everything else, we're facing a drought that's going to seriously impact our ability to farm. Even Bonneville is helping out by trying to buy people's water up so they won't use it on agriculture, which may be good for saving power, but sure heck on the rural community that's depending on those people to buy their goods. And so that would be, Chairman Butler, my pitch to you is the importance of the regional investment funds and the rural investment funds and the port revolving funds to the rural parts of the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Judge White. I want you to know that I have every respect for the commission and for the information that you bring us. I personally have a great admiration and respect for you, Judge White, and having worked with you side by side in the Association of Oregon Counties. And Representative Ringel, this is the other Democrat in Eastern Oregon I was telling you
about. Second one. Mr. Chair, I whispered to Representative Smith here. I didn't know there were Democrats in Eastern County.
They're hard to find.
And Representative Smith said yes to the judge and his wife.
She's a little shaky.
She votes for
something. Senator Yee is recognized, please.
You say we can ask questions?
Well, the business. And as much as this is the only opportunity we'll really have to have the commissioner for us, I think it's appropriate. So please, Senator Yee is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Commissioner Mazur. And I appreciate hearing your going around the rural area of the state and look at the rural communities. And you say you were impressed with the impact of the Economic Development Department's efforts. So I would like to hear, what did you see that caused you to feel very impressed with the impact?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's gone, Senator Yee. I think Judge White really hit it on the head. And again, I have to speak from my vantage point of my profession, which is an engineer. You cannot attract business to rural areas unless you've got infrastructure to be able to even incite a level of interest of activity. And the department has concentrated a lot of their energy and their expenditure funds in that arena, which I think has borne good results in terms of bringing that capacity building up to a level where the rural communities can start to compete.
Will you share with us which communities were impacted with the infrastructure constructions?
We have actually a full listing available that shows the appropriation of funds, and maybe I could revert to Chairman Wilcox to cover those for us.
Actually, I don't have the piece of it.
You saw yourself personally.
There are 420 communities in Oregon, and any given year the department will touch and have a positive impact on something like 250 of those communities, and it obviously changes year to year, but very consistent we're hitting, affecting two-thirds of the communities with some project, be it water, sewer, community facilities or something like that. We have a policy of traveling around the state. We were in John Day, Umatilla, Medford. We try and get around as basically, other than when the legislature's in session, hold meetings, every other meeting at various places around the state, and talk to the local community about what their needs are and see what they're doing. In John Day, for example, they had some very substantial needs to improve their airport facilities, improve their water system and community facilities, and so we had a chance to meet with essentially the entire community leadership about how we could work together to solve those needs.
Give her some at home, she liked that.
And I can follow up.
I was wrong. 240 communities, not 420.
I can give you some examples, Senator Yee, in Burns, Hines, in that area, when juvenile corrections were looking for a place to site one of their facilities. We had some people on the west side of Burns that were willing to donate some land, but it would cost $200,000 to put water and sewer in that. And using regional strategy and rural investment funds plus money for the city donated their time and effort, we were able to do that and were fortunately successful in attracting that, which was 55 jobs, which in Burns, 55 jobs is a lot. When we attracted SMC into the old Edward Hines Lumber Company, when they went out of business, we had to have some roads into that area, and we were fortunate to be able to use funds to do that. And then since SMC and LP went into where Edward Hines used to be, they were concerned. Edward Hines had its own water system, but it really wasn't adequate. And so for Hines to be able to take care of them, they had to annex that land, and to service it, they had to have a water storage facility plus new water and sewer lines to do that. They didn't have to have all new, but several, but it was a substantial project, and funds from the department made those possible. And, you know, I don't know all the details in the rest of Oregon, but generally that's the type of thing that happens in rural Oregon that makes these things take place, Senator.
Thank you very much, Representative Ringo.
Thank you. Welcome this afternoon. I've seen a presentation chart that says that 60% of the jobs that are created or retained are in urban areas, not rural areas. And that troubles me a little bit, and I'm hoping to explore that over the next few days. But I'm wondering if you have any comments as to, does that statistic represent a problem? What are your comments on that?
We try and focus our resources on the rural and distressed area that don't have the resources. It's very relatively easier to help get jobs in urban areas. 10 years ago, the department was very successful at attracting large semiconductor plants to the metropolitan area, which has obviously a huge job impact. It is much harder to get a few jobs in a rural area and takes a lot more money. If you look at where our resources are going, we tend to make loans to help businesses in the metropolitan area that will get repaid, and so we get job credit without having a permanent outflow of cash. Tend to make grants in the rural areas to get a smaller number of jobs. All I can tell you is we continue to focus our effort on rural and distressed area, and some of those urban jobs are in distressed parts of Portland in particular. North Portland or the Lentz area is also an area of focus.
Does that statistic, does it represent a problem, or is it just that's the way it is? And
well, Representative Ringo, I think that's the way it is, which is a problem. You know, and one thing that's become obvious to me through some of the reports from economists and other that we've been privileged to have at the department is that I may be wrong on the percentage, but a high percentage, 85-90% of the jobs come from companies within Oregon. You know, we hear about the big ones that move in and create all these jobs, but taking those aside, most of the jobs are created internally. And what I've also began to learn is that you start with a nucleus. The nucleus is obviously the Portland metropolitan area. And then the way things seem to work is you fill out from there is that capacity. And the further you're away from that nucleus, the harder and longer it's going to take to get jobs. So I've become a great proponent of those close to Portland to fill up with their jobs so that we can get it clear out to Burns. Well, you know, I'm looking very happily at Ben expanding so great that maybe some of that will take and come our way also. But we're looking at distance, and you know, most of our communities in Oregon were built on a natural resource base, and now that base has deserted us, and so all of the cards I think are looking the other direction on most of the development.
Mr. Chair, well, we have no problem with making loans or grants to infrastructure needs, but we were looking at the list of the infrastructure needs, among which are for facilities. Some of them are destined to be closed, and the loans and grants is one of on the list of was it an airport that was destined to be closed? And the loan, it's among the list. And I was looking at Albany City's infrastructure needs. And on the top of it, it is a privately owned hotel that's on the list of needs to be eligible for state loans and grants. That's rather unusual. Can you explain why would state loans and grants be given to privately owned hotels?
Senator Yee, I think we said in part, remember I made just a little bit of light of that yesterday when I said over in Clatsop County we had a dolly for Betsy on that on behalf of Representative Close. I think what this represents is this represents a needs assessment of what all of the counties and cities within those counties believe that they may need, that they could use, whether it comes from the OECD or not. So it may be that something of that nature, some private investment of that nature, would never come from the community development program, but nonetheless, it's my understanding that this is kind of a Christmas list of if they had the ability to tap into $2.9 billion, that this is how they would, well, I guess it's $2.2 billion because the rest of it is locally funded, but certainly the commission. In other words, that's from the Oregon needs and
yes, the certain process.
And basically, doesn't that include just everything that the community thinks that they might need without any kind of, there's been no filtering process in this in any way, shape, or form, has there been?
Yeah, Chairman Butler, that is just a wants list at every community because both the feds and the state says if you don't have the project on there, if you apply for funding, you will not be able to receive it. So anything that they can think of that they might want to do, they put it on that list so that if it ever comes to pass, they will be eligible for appropriate funding. But, you know, a hotel, to my knowledge, is something that we were not be eligible for funding from our department. Isn't that correct?
Representative Ringo is recognized.
I mean, the problem I have is in the front cover of this book, it says $2.9 billion in needs identified. It doesn't say wish list. It says needs. And to me, that gets blurred. What is just something that a locality submitted because, hey, it's free to submit an application as opposed to bona fide need, and I don't think that's clear.
The word I would change to wants.
Exactly.
Needs versus wants. But I, again, I don't think there's any filtering process. I don't believe that in that process.
No, but that's not clear in this. That's the problem. They specify that this is a wish list, that these are not identified needs. Because it says identified needs, and they're not.
I was concerned because Albany City Manager identified $279 million infrastructure needs, and when you look at the list, it's privately owned facilities. So I think that needs to be more focused.
Thank you, Senator Yee. Representative Johnson, you had a question before you left.
I apologize for stepping out for a moment. As long as we're having sort of a philosophical conversation about what the role of the commission is in guiding the agency, I'd like to get your commission perspective on what role you think is appropriate for the agency in doing huge projects with lots of tax incentives and lots of local partners. And let me bring this down so it's not quite so hypothetical. When you have the state's economic development agency coming in as the quarterback on a big project that involves, let's say, counties, cities, maybe a port district, philosophically, as the board of directors for the agency, what do you think the role of the agency ought to be in both the recruitment process and on the follow-up?
Well, Oregon's tried very hard to make it easier for businesses to locate and do business successfully in Oregon. So we have a one-stop shopping for permits in a lot of cases where the department's been delegated to lead responsibility. And so in that area, we may not be the large dollar provider, but we do help organize all the state departments that have to provide some sort of review or approval of the process. In terms of funding, we do try and leverage the limited dollars we have. So if we can bring in a federal agency or something like that, that would be something we'd strongly encourage.
I haven't asked my question with clarity. Let me be more specific. In the recruitment of United States Gypsum to Rainier, there were a lot of partners involved in that. The lead agency was OEDD. I can't remember where the C goes. It involved cities, counties, ports, and urban renewal districts. Who philosophically is responsible for tying up all the loose ends on that? OEDD came to the table with the lion's share of the money. I'm asking from the board of directors' point of view, does that also accompany the lion's share of the responsibility to make sure that there's follow-up on the project and that all the partners perform the way that they're supposed to?
It definitely does in terms of pulling the deal together that would get U.S. Gypsum there and the plant built. In terms of after they're there, whether there are continuing responsibilities, I don't think we've yet taken on that responsibility. But
Dr. Mader, welcome, incidentally.
Thank you.
We're old friends.
Good to see you. I guess my take would be just a little bit different. I think when you bring partners to the plate, and every partner has their own role to play in it. I think that the partners as an aggregate assume a certain level of responsibility for performance. And so even though the state brings lion's share of funding to the plate, for the state not to expect the other partners sitting at the table who are benefiting from the level of activity to not assume the responsibility of making sure that performance is done is probably not good performance on our end.
So when $419,000 of public money gets left on the table, who's responsible at the end of a recruitment? Whose responsibility is that?
Well, that's a little different scenario if you're trying to pick and guess from a construction standpoint what's going to be happening in price scenarios. That's much more difficult to predict at the onset. You usually have much better hindsight after you see the dollars left on the table. So I would place that in a little different environment than I would necessarily looking at making sure that performance gets conducted on time, that construction gets done, that you have good level of completed project in accordance with what the original design was about. I mean, without really looking at the specifics of looking at how much money was left on the table and why it was left on the table, it's pretty difficult to assign levels of responsibility on that.
Johnson, was that responsive?
Without delving, Mr. Chair, deeply into the facts of the unique scenario, no. It wasn't responsive, but I don't want to take the committee's time and the witness's time by going deeper in that in a single scenario.
Hold that on your list. Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chair Butler. I represent 8 of Oregon's rural counties, 3 of which are the smallest in the state, 1 of which I claim to be the most remote, although Representative Butler might argue with me on that. I'd be interested in knowing what you folks see as the role the department should play in assisting our small communities. And by small, I'm referring to communities under 800 people.
I think we all agree that that's one of our lead responsibilities, because communities like that not only lack the financial resources, they lack a lot of the technical expertise to, whether it's to put together a water or sewer project or something like that. And so we provide not just financial assistance, but a huge amount of time is devoted to technical assistance, because they just don't have the staff resources in a small community to do that.
Follow up from Representative Smith.
What would the impact be on the department if the commission decided the new role for the department would be not only to help get the money out, but help put the package together to access those dollars?
We are doing that to the maximum extent we can now with the resources we have. I guess I would say that it's not for us to decide what our mission is. We carry out the mission you give us, and you know, we believe the mission is principally to assist rural and distressed communities. And so with the resources we have, be they financial or technical assistance, we are going to do that to the extent we can.
Further follow-up?
The citizens of District 59 elected me for one reason, and that was because of my experience in economic development. As a moral employee, as a person who's written strategies for regional strategies, as a person who's put together grant applications, one of the things I'm going to work with this committee on over the coming days is to figure out how do we get the department in at the ground level and not expect a small community to put these applications together who don't have the technical expertise to do it. But once the department and the community decide it's a mutual priority, that the department carry the load on this. And perhaps it means having a staff member assigned to the project the entire time from the time a grant application is thought of to writing it, to completing it, to even almost serving as a project manager until the project is completed. I've got projects in my district that have been going for 7 years. And to me, that's unacceptable. And the citizens of District 59 don't think that's acceptable. So I want to work with you folks on this committee to figure out how to take these dollars we have and really get them into our rural communities.
Representative Smith, I think you're right on target, but I do believe that the department is doing 2 things to help in that. One was the regional development officers. I know that they helped us write several of the grants so that we would have them done in the proper form to be submitted. And the other opportunity is with the old regional strategies. I think that's the regional investment fund now. The counties do have the latitude, if they want to put some of that money into expertise where they could hire some people to do that.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Butler. I've got to tell you, I've been waiting for 10 years to sit here.
Uh-oh. Catherine.
Those dollars are available to assist our communities, and they're able to go out and they're able to hire the technical expertise. But let me give you a case in point of what happens. They go out and they hire a young 24-year-old kid straight out of college who's never put a grant application together, and they now say you're a project developer. Go out and develop a water system. And that person trips through that career 4, 5, 6 years until they actually figure out what's going on. In the meantime, a lot of communities are suffering, where we do have regional development officers out there, and I think I have 4 of the best in my district, but there are only so many of them, and the needs of the community are greater, and I really think it would make sense for our communities to sit down with your department, identify what a priority is, and have somebody assigned from your department to even complete the application, because you folks know what you want in there. I mean, I've got city council members who are part-time people who have no inclination how to put an application together, and yet they're being asked to do that before the department can assist them. Or they turn to a 24-year-old kid and say, can you help us with this? And I think you folks have the expertise, and I'm going to implore you to take that expertise and to help these communities.
In the last 2 years, we have gone through a very major reorganization. We put our staff out in the field with the RDOs and others. We are really trying to serve the local communities. And you would be amazed the extent to which the department does fill out the applications for particularly smaller communities. And we will continue to do the maximum extent we can. The limitation, and I understand how pressed state resources are, but it really is a staffing resource, because the amount of program dollars each individual staff person has to be responsible for has more than doubled, and the what's expected of them in terms of the technical assistance has also increased, as well as the number of projects.
Just one last.
Yes.
And then I'll let it go.
No, that's fine. And I let me see if I can cancel a portion of what I hear your questions leading to, and a portion of the response from the commission. You're asking for the regional development officers to hit the ground with more experience and more tools. In other words, having perhaps someone that's not just freshly graduated from college, but actually has a step or two ahead of that. Is that what?
That's part of it. What I'm trying to say is we need to get experienced people putting together these projects and not expecting a small rural community to put it together. They don't have the capability. They don't have the expertise, and if we rely on them, these are never going to get done. And we're missing out on those opportunities just because we're not putting that staff in place. And using dollars as an excuse doesn't work, because when you look at CDBG applications, community development block grant applications, you can take a portion of those dollars and use them for admin costs. And so there's got to be a way to take those dollars and help pay for these state resources. We're just not thinking outside of the box on how to do this.
But having the horrible experience, Representative Smith, going through a community development block grant, which I swore I'd never do again, and I haven't, you put an awful lot of time in there before you kick in the admin. You got to get approved before you get the admin, and the hard time is getting it approved. But the other real problem, because I think on the whole, the regional development officers are pretty experienced, pretty mature type people. The problem is your district and Chairman Butler's district and mine, and you put one person in Harney, Grant, and Malheur counties, and you know, you spend an awful lot of your time just getting from A to B to C, and that's just a reality of living out there. Obviously more staff would help, but more staff costs more money, and unfortunately that seems to drive most things, but I certainly think you're on the right. I don't know the solution, but I think you have the problem.
Representative Johnson.
It's just a follow-on, thank you, Mr. Chair, a follow-on comment to this exchange. I fully support having more experienced people in the field, and by experienced, people who know where the limits of what their capabilities are. It has been my observation that you have very well-intended but under-trained folks negotiating legal contracts with a potential client and essentially giving away the farm. And I think that's of some concern. I've spoken at length with the department about having some standardized training for their regional development officers so that when you say the word collateral to them, somebody knows what you're talking about. Right now, I think different regions are blessed to have particularly skillful people in both their people skills and in their technical understanding of putting together complex transactions. To have some guarantee of uniformity across the state for that level of performance by the regional development officers, some standardized training for them, some curriculum, some clear understanding of when do you go to the Department of Justice to have contractual language reviewed. And that might be something worthy of commission consideration.
These are all great points and things we definitely need to work on. When we reorganized the department, we were trying to get a matrix organization. So you'd have regional development officers who really had the experience and were empowered to deal out in the regions. And we moved a large part of the staff out of Salem, but we also kept the expertise in different program areas with the theory that all the RDOs would report back, so you would get that consistent statewide overview. But from the customer's point of view, they wouldn't know that. The consistency would be behind the scenes, and the RDO would deal with them. And I want to learn more about the specific case, because you obviously have an experience that was really troubling, and we as a commission need to know about the details of that experience. I know that was a very complex transaction, and I will take responsibility. We were the lead agency trying to pull that together. We took pride that it came together, but if there was a problem and it didn't come together as well as it should have, we need to know so we can fix it next time.
I just as a follow-up, there are huge problems that color my perception of the agency dramatically.
Okay.
And I just would share as a follow-up thought, there ought to be a mechanism so that the commission is aware of these and that you all don't get walked into a setting like this with folks that have had on-the-ground experience and you're confronted with a situation that went sideways and you don't know anything about it.
I agree. I can tell you, I have gotten lots of phone calls from people saying, there's a problem here. Can you find out what's going on? And so we're very open to that.
Representative Ringo is recognized.
I just want to spin my perspective from Beaverton, Washington County. Washington County commissioners made a deal with Intel in putting a facility that they could not bring in new jobs. That was an essential requirement, no new jobs. And in my opinion, this department was created in the mid to late 80s when we were still in the midst of a recession. But those times aren't here anymore. I mean, we're not in a recession. And I question the need for economic development at all in my county and in the growing areas of the state. And my, I guess, philosophy is, particularly would rather you not encourage people to come from out of state to move to Washington County. Some people, and part of this is philosophical, some people think more growth the better, you know, business, et cetera, et cetera. I don't believe that. I think, you know, growth does have a negative aspect to it, and there's a balance. And at least in Washington County, the balance is very tilted, and we don't want more. And that's why when I look at the percentage of going to urban, that really doesn't say which is distressed and which isn't distressed. But I'm just apprising you that my perspective is I would rather you not do anything to bring jobs to Washington County. Take them to Morrow County, to Wheeler County, and that's where your resources got to go.
Well, let me...
We're out of here.
Remember the 18% unemployment in
Harney. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so when I say there's not a recession, not statewide, and the trick is focusing in on the localities where they have grave problems.
Let me respond to that in two ways. First of all, when we did the restructuring of the department in new directions and change it from economic to economic and community development, we tried to not just focus on economic development, more jobs. We tried to focus on providing communities with a planning tool that would work to achieve the community's goals. And we took the lead in bringing together the five community solution agencies so that they can deal with not just job creation, but whatever the transportation or housing or other problem there is in the community. So that tool will work whether it's a rural area that whose principal need is jobs or a metropolitan area that has a huge transportation problem. And our job is to provide you the tools you need to solve what you as a local area believes is your priority problem.
And I need to follow up on that. So if I come to you and say, We need transportation infrastructure. Please help us expand Highway 26, mass transit, all that. Are you going to help us out?
What will happen is you'll go to, we are one of the five community solution agencies. You will get those community solution agencies working as a group. In that case, transportation would obviously be the lead agency because it's their primary responsibility, not ours, but we would assist that effort. My other response to your comment is we're not going out trying to attract California businesses to come to Washington County. If a business comes to the department and says, we would like to know what's available, we're not going to, you know, pretend that Washington County doesn't exist, but our principal job is to try and direct them to those other parts of the state that really need and want them.
I appreciate that, but I want to go back to what you said a second ago. You have a focus on rural and distressed communities, and by distressed, let's talk about economically distressed, I think that's what
right.
I mean. So do you have a role in working on the infrastructure of Beaverton? Is that within the purview of this agency?
As part of the five community solutions teams, to the extent we can contribute to a solution, yes.
I don't know if it helps, but the Rural Investment Fund can only be spent in the rural and distressed communities. The Regional Investment Fund goes to all of them, and it can be used to address the problems of that particular county or community, you know, whether it's straight economic development or some housing or other related. That's up to the communities to set their own priorities on that, Representative Ringel.
Thank you.
Further questions of members of the commission? We're grateful to have you here and take time out of your busy schedule. Thank you very much. Dr. Mayor, it's nice to have you here. Judge White, my heart goes back to Eastern Oregon with you. I have to have somebody remind me almost every day what a great time I'm having. But I do have a great economic development bill, which I hope to concentrate jobs on those areas of Oregon where we have the high unemployment and the low median income, and we'd like to be able to concentrate into that area. So, but particularly when we hear about 18% high double digit unemployment in these counties, that's heartbreaking. That's you know, when you consider during the Great Depression we were in these counties at 30 some odd percent unemployment, we're just almost halfway there. So this is not a pleasant situation. Anything we can do to help out through this department, we just encourage you to do. If there's no further question, we'll, for the present time, what I would like to do is go ahead and call just a couple of minutes recess while we prepare then for a work session on Housing and Community Development, or Housing and Community Services Department, on a federal funds application. So we're going to go ahead and close.